You're listening to the Element Style Lessons in Gaming PlayStation Podcast, where your news is raw, uncut, uncensored, and the world of opinionated fanboys is severely shot down. So do enjoy the show.
Oh my god, how can your console be better than mine? Your console doesn't even have games. I do not like that game because it's on your console. Blah. いらっしゃいませ。これではレソンズインゲーミングポッドキャスト、この番組はご覧のスポンサーの提供でお送りします。
Thank you Japanese Element for that wonderful introduction. Hey guys, welcome back to another edition of Lessons in Gaming. There has been a lot of hot sauce in the news these days. The first thing I wanted to dive into was Halo Legends, straight from the legendary studios of production IG Bones, Toei, and the director of Ghost in the Shell, Mamoru Oshii. Microsoft is bringing the famed and loved franchise of Halo to anime fans, but is it worth it? Is it something people are clamoring for, or is Microsoft treading on foreign ground that will bite them in the ass? And to help me answer this question, I'll pull some quotes from some esteemed posters around NeoGAF and GamePro forums that should shed some light on the subject. Esteemed posters of which are loyal and diehard Halo fans to boot. Now, quote, "Who the hell watches that Jap crap?" Quote, "Anime fans are such tards." Quote, "Ew, animu." Now, for those of you who don't know, animu is a derogatory term for anime, the polar opposite, if you will. So, does this latest venture serve to benefit Microsoft, or will the fans have to muster the courage to go back on their extremist and trite feedback and watch it, because it's like Halo for cereal?
Rejected.
Now, in my opinion, I don't see this as beneficial at all. And sure, they may bridge a gap between them and the Japanese audience, but their market is largely based in the US. And if the diehard fans of Halo are speaking out in rebukes, then I have no choice but to believe the larger voice. This is not to say the folks at Production IG, Toei, and Bones will put out some atrocious work. I'm just saying they will most probably turn Master Chief into some hero that fights like Ryu and shoots like Alucard from Hellsing. The universe and style just doesn't match. Okay, well, that's my take on it. I'd also like to know what you guys think, so head on over to the forums now at element7x.com, and let's make things happen. The next headline I wanted to cover was the price of the PlayStation 3. Now, during an earnings report, Nobuyuki Oneda suddenly and supposedly said that everything was on schedule, and that the cost of the production of the PS3 had gone down by 70%. Now, its launch price was $699, and that was at a loss. So that would put its production cost at an estimate of about $240 now. So it would appear that within months, Sony could potentially start seeing a profit per console. Whether or not they reduce the price by $50 or $100 remains to be seen, but it's interesting to know that they will be turning a profit regardless of the price hatchet. Will they reduce it by 100 and grab the attention of media outlets worldwide? Or will they try to recoup their losses and reduce it by only $50, so they can profit even more per console? We'll find out this coming TGS, as we welcome Kazuo Hirai back as a keynote speaker for their conference entitled New Tactics. Now, I also wanted to touch on a little flame war that's been going on recently, just a snippet. Several people are ranting about id Software's recent flamebait statement, quote, "PS3 has a lot of catching up to do." This is in reference to their game Rage running at 60 frames per second on its Windows and Xbox 360 versions. I choose to ignore it. I mean, the PS3 is a complex machine, and in previous episodes, I have explained why it is just that much more difficult to program for. Now, if Carmack had developed straight away for the PS3, the other two versions wouldn't need to catch up to anything, because programming on a hardware level for the PS3 can easily translate into source code for DirectX API. Some people are calling id Software lazy, and some are defending them, saying the PS3 isn't as powerful. Now, both parties are absolutely wrong, and Carmack just recently elaborated on his poorly chosen words, and said that while the PS3 is much more difficult to tap into, once they do tap into it, there will be no problems, and all versions of the game shall be running side by side with no problems, completely identical to each other. So, let's move on, shall we? I'm not going to shove a review in your faces, but I am going to deliver it for X-Men Origins Wolverine. That's right. It's time for another edition of 77's Review Corner, only this time Bond has been sent off on a mission, and replacing him this week is your friend from Metal Gear Solid Rising, Raiden. Enjoy.
A.K.A. Lightning, the Rain Transformed. I'm going to be reviewing X-Men Origins Wolverine for you, because James Bond seems to be on a mission. Well, that's okay. I like Wolverine. Me and him share sort of a kinship, a quality. We're both manufactured to a degree. So, Raven Software has developed quite the reputation in the video game world. It's starting to become recognized as one of the few developers who know how to make a decent and fun superhero game. First, they brought us the excellent X-Men Legends series, and then they created an even better game in Marvel Ultimate Alliance. So if there's anyone we can trust to make a good superhero game, it's Raven Software. Now they bring us X-Men Origins Wolverine, and I can say that they do not disappoint. Wolverine is not a nice guy. He isn't family-friendly, and he doesn't like to cuddle. He's a guy with razor-sharp claws that extend from his fists, and those claws are good for one thing only. Killing. Activision and Raven Software have embraced this aspect of the Wolverine character to a great degree. No longer is Wolverine forced to be neutered by a T-for-teen rating. X-Men Origins Wolverine is rated M, and with good reason. It's a gory, violent, and visceral game that embraces a side of Wolverine that is seen in the comics, but rarely seen in video games. Any game about a person with sharp pointy things of death built into his body should be violent, and X-Men Origins Wolverine is definitely one of those games. Decapitations, dismemberments, blood spurts, and screams of agony are the norm as Wolverine slices and dices his way through the game's 6 to 8 hour playtime. The game follows the plot of the film, tracing Wolverine's origins as a soldier for the government, to his metallic transformation through his quest for revenge. Hugh Jackman, Liev Schreiber, and other actors from the film reprise their roles, both voices and likenesses in the game. The story is well done, with flashbacks to Wolverine's previous missions as a government operative. There are a few deviations from the movie in order to include more action, but overall it's a decent narrative and a good companion piece to the film. The graphics in the game are stellar. Wolverine's character model looks great and animates fluidly. Environments are rich and varied, ranging from the frozen Canadian wilderness to rich jungles to the neon streets of Las Vegas. One interesting graphical touch that they added to the game is in the damage that Wolverine sustains. As he gets damaged, Wolverine's skin and flesh will literally be torn from his body, exposing his metal skeleton. And it will slowly heal. But the patches of clothing that were destroyed don't return. So as you fight, you'll find that the character model constantly changes throughout the level to reflect Wolverine's healed or damaged state. It's a very cool touch that ties into the healing mechanic of the game. But more on that in a second. The game plays much like God of War, where you'll find yourself moving through the level, solving environmental puzzles and killing many bad guys. It's fun and entertaining, and the light platforming elements keep things fresh. As you play, you'll earn experience points that can be used to upgrade your skills. You'll also unlock new moves periodically throughout the game. This, coupled with great fatality moves and interesting context-sensitive environmental kills, makes sure the combat never feels stale. One interesting aspect of the game is the way it handles Wolverine's healing factor, which I just mentioned above. You will automatically heal throughout the game, but the real danger comes with the more damage you take. As you take damage, your vital organs become more exposed, bringing us back to the awesome graphical touch I just mentioned. As your organs are exposed, you can become more vulnerable and can eventually be killed unless you take a moment to heal. It's a very well done game mechanic that adds a level of strategy to the combat. Are there any flaws with the title? A few, but not as many as you'd think. There are a few graphical hiccups and some pop-in issues, nothing that gets in the way of gameplay, but they are noticeable from time to time. The camera, for the most part, is very well done. However, there are times when it can get caught on corners. It's momentarily distracting, but easily fixed with the right thumbstick. The only other fault I can level at the game is its length. Depending on what difficulty level you're playing at, you can easily fly through this game in 6 hours. So for a $60 game, that's $10 an hour. It's pretty disappointing. Of course, playing on the harder levels, searching for the hidden unlockables such as special costumes and design art can extend gameplay time, but not by much. The game is short. The time you spend with it will be great. It's a fun, action-filled game that finally captures the animalistic nature of the title character. Too often we find Wolverine controlled by ratings, but not in this game. Wolverine is unleashed to his full potential. Because of the length of the game, I cannot recommend this for purchase, but it should absolutely be on any action game or Wolverine fans' list of games to play. My score, 4 out of 5. I am Lightning. The rain transformed. Back to you, Colonel.
Raiden, I'm not recording this podcast. It's some guy named Element from Outer Haven.
Shit, are you serious?
Rendezvous with Solid Snake, and he'll give you the details.
I'm sorry, Colonel, but I'm not giving anyone the details.
Thank you guys for that special review. It's quite entertaining. So I'd like to introduce a new albeit short segment to the show. It's called Smeagol's Comedy Short, and it's on right now.
Look, Smeagol brings Master food. Smeagol's not useless.
I know. I'll stick him in a stew.
He ruins it.
This could use some taters.
What? Taters! Precious!
Potatoes! Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
The fat hobbit ruins it! He ruins the curries!
And we're back. Thank you very much, Smeagol. Alright, alright. So, I'll conclude this episode of Lessons in Gaming with a little short audio clip to whet your appetites. If you're a sci-fi fan like myself, you will know the name Nathan Fillion, aka Mal, from Firefly and Serenity. He's providing his voice talent for Halo ODST, and well, here's a teaser.
Hey, rookie, you out there? Respond, that's an order.
Give it up, Gunny.
Oh, give up, huh? What if it were you down there?
Just saying, I ain't dead.
Oh, you're a piece of work, Romeo.
Lance Corporal Koju Agu, Romeo.
What the hell am I supposed to do with this inside a Covenant ship?
Real lucky for the ladies to hear him tell it, but all I care about is his aim. His luck with targets at long range. Corporal Taylor Miles, Dutch.
Now's one of those times. Pays to be the strong, silent type.
Death's head slapped right on his helmet. Heavy weapon specialist. Time on Mars tends to give a man perspective.
Amen.
Private First Class Michael Crespo, Mickey.
My vote, hold up, wait for backup.
Smart enough to be a pilot, trained to blow stuff up.
This ain't a job you want to rush.
He's never seen a planet get glassed. I hope he won't see it today. And the FNG, a rookie. Not exactly green. No ODST is. If I didn't think he could do the job, I wouldn't have him on my six. He doesn't say much, but I don't care. I just need him to listen. These are my men. And I'm dropping them straight into hell.
Come on, Veronica. What could be more important than that carrier?
My orders.
Naval intelligence says we're taking down a Covenant carrier that's sitting pretty over New Mombasa. Not what I'd call a routine operation, but it doesn't matter. We know what we're up against because we've seen it all before. Harvest, the Outer Colonies, Reach. The Covenant comes to kill us, and the ODSTs? We do our best to kill them first. We're planning for a close quarters fight. The Navy Special Weapon set us up real nice. The suppressed M7. It'll tear through armor and turn bad guys into chum. And the M6S. Whisper quiet with armor-piercing rounds. Brutes might see us coming. The only thing they're gonna hear is our asses hitting the ground. Wasn't just our weapon systems, either. Navy eggheads knocked the dust off our electronics, too. Visor upgrades with uplinks to secure metropolitan systems. Clearance codes to access New Mombasa's superintendent artificial intelligence. That means navigation data on the fly. Instant intel in the field. Hell, we could commandeer the city's garbage trucks if we needed. Of course, from what we can tell, the super isn't exactly in fighting shape. Seems the Covenant knocked a few screws loose. Won't be a problem. ODSTs are used to working in the dark.
Banshees, on your six! Hit the deck!
We're losing her!
Watch out! Mickey, Dutch! Status! Alive or dead, we're pulling them out. You hear me? Make some noise. I got your back.
The Covenant have found Earth. They own New Mombasa. Anyone that could have driven them off is dead or gone. I'd say that makes for desperate times. Me and my team?
Guess we're the desperate measures.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Lessons in Gaming. I hope you enjoyed it as much as the next person. We'll be back next time, when the time is permitted and the sun isn't so damn hot. Until then, sayonara, suckers.
Don't you know?